Starting or operating a small business is hard enough when you know what you're doing. But when it comes to understanding the law and how it could impact your business on a financial, operational, or even planning level, you need an attorney. Welcome to this edition of Tell Me About the Hard Part with your host, Attorney Siobhan J. Smith. Whether you're a seasoned entrepreneur or just starting out from your kitchen table, Attorney Smith is ready, willing, and able to provide the information you need to successfully navigate the laws affecting your business. And now, here's your host and competent legal advisor, Attorney Siobhan J. Smith.
Welcome again to Tell Me About the Hard Part. It's a podcast where we delve into some of the more challenging parts of business ownership, entrepreneurship, freelancing, but not just the hard parts, how our guests have also overcome those, and also just some of the joys of owning a business. I am your host, Siobhan J. Smith, attorney, business strategist, and problem solver. So that's why we're here. And I am incredibly excited to talk to our guest today. It's Maxell Hardy, or Chef Maxell Hardy. And I'm excited about this because he's what I view as a multi-passionate entrepreneur, someone who does a lot of things, but it centers around one thing. For him, that thing is food. It's entertaining. His business is catering. It's being a personal chef to pretty high-profile clientele. He's a restaurateur owning and operating two restaurants in the city of Detroit. He has an event space. He has a chef apparel line. He's the author of two award-winning cookbooks, and not to mention his philanthropy work. So super excited to have you here with us today. And just want to start with a little bit of your background. So culinary arts school is not something you hear a lot of young people or boys say they want to do. What is it that made you go to culinary art school?
Well, in high school, I got hurt my junior year in high school where I couldn't play basketball for that year. And so during that time, I was like, I got to stay active, stay busy and doing something. And so we had a chef that came to the school, Chef Pajarski, came from Carnival Cruise Line, and he and I kind of hit it off. And so early mornings, I would go make cookies and sell them to different students on their way into school every day. And then it kind of just started moving from there, where it was like, all right, well, making cookies, let's make stuff on the weekends for teachers to take home. And I turned it into a culinary program, kind of like a catering program. And then I started working at Ruby Tuesdays with the chef, Jarski, and it became a passion and love. And one day he was like, Chef, would you be interested in going to culinary school for basketball and cooking? And so I was like, wow, this is win-win. So
right.
That's how it started. You know, I got a scholarship to go to Johnson Wilkes for basketball and cooking. I never looked back.
So it was not something that was on your radar. It was really, you enjoyed cooking, it sounds like, and there was someone in your life who said, hey, you may be good at this.
Yeah, I mean, you know, Chef Pajarski obviously saw something in me in the kitchen outside of what I saw. So not only was I working at the school, but I was working at Ruby Tuesdays in the evenings, kind of holding my skills there. He was the restaurant manager there. So, and, you know, it kind of happened pretty quick once I started doing that. And but yeah, it wasn't the first plan.
Okay. Yep. Most of us aren't on our first plan anyway. So that makes sense.
Right. Right.
Tell me about your first few jobs you had when you left culinary arts school.
So when I was in school, I would go to the career center, and different people would call Johnson Wilkes on the weekends and looking for chefs and caterers for the weekend. They knew just, you know, Johnson Wilkes was a culinary school, so they had the best of the best. They probably could save some money. So one time I went there and I got a call back. It was for John Walsh from America's Most Wanted to do a catering for him. And so that was kind of like my first outside of culinary school. And then, you know, like, oh, maybe this might be the route I want to go as a personal chef. In high school, I said in an article, well, I had a good game one game, and I said if I make it to culinary school and finish culinary school, maybe I'll be the chef for Magic Johnson or Michael Jordan. So being a personal chef was always kind of on my radar. So when I did that night for John Walsh, I was like, wow, I can really do this personal chef thing. It was a small, intimate party. And so that was kind of my focus for a while. You know, just going after high profile clients, and trying to get them under my belt. But then after that, I started, you know, working at different country clubs and casinos and hotels, and kind of bouncing around to different places, just trying to pick up different cuisines, learn as much as I can, and soak up, you know, all the different pieces that each culinary hotel or restaurant had, so I can just, you know, be a well-rounded chef versus just focusing on one specific thing. So, yeah, that's how I started.
So you knew, even before you started taking more corporate jobs, that working for yourself was something that you wanted to do?
Yeah. Out the gate, I knew eventually I wanted to own my own company. Mm-hmm. And really focus on being an entrepreneur. But I knew first I had to go and get the necessary tools to be able to understand the whole gamut of it. Because, like, right, if I want to run Chef Max Enterprise, what does that mean? That means, you know, weddings, bar mitzvahs, consulting, personal chef stuff. You know, it's just a lot of different things under that. So I knew I had to spend a little time in the industry working, you know, for different organizations before I'll go out and start my own. But at the same time, while working for a hotel or country club or casino, I had my own company as well, where I did little small gigs that I knew I could manage and deal with versus, you know, just going out there blind and shooting stuff in the foot.
Got it. So it sounds like a lot of people, you kind of had a side hustle while you had your full-time job. What was the moment that you knew, okay, it's time to throw the anchor away, leave my kind of corporate paycheck, where I'm sure you got paid very well, and the places where you worked, to say, let me just focus on my thing? What was that kind of line in the sand?
You know, I met a young lady, a lady at Weaver's Island, was pretty well off, and she's come down and eat my food every day from the country club, and she started saying, you know, Chef, do you think about, you know, doing outside events, doing this, doing that? So she just took it upon herself to help me, right? So she just saw something in me and started, like, booking me for different little events, food festivals, tastings, and Taste of Miami, and the Food and Wine Fest in Miami. So I started doing stuff like that, and I was like, oh, wow, this is kind of cool. I can get outside of, you know, the day-to-day corporate setting and have some fun with this. And, you know, at the time, like, you really didn't see a lot of black chefs on Food Network, and you didn't really see much of us. So I wanted to, you know, explore those things. But then what really hit it, I came to work, and our GM was like, hey, Chef, you know, I think we're going to go different way. You know, he came in as an intermediate GM, and I just had just a good rapport relationship with all the guests on the island. And I don't know what the reasoning was behind it, but they gave me a severance package for $80,000, and it was in the ring of my severance package. I couldn't work. If so, then I lose my severance package for 6 months or a year, whatever it was. And I took that and started Chef Max Miami. So that's kind of how it started. It wasn't a determined moment like, hey, I'm going to leave now. I was kind of forced out. So, but it was for the best. And so during that time, you know, I started my website. I started, you know, advertising with different, you know, organizations and websites and doing all kind of marketing stuff. And I was like, all right, here it is. Let's roll. And so it was good. Within the first year, you know, we started, I started going after weddings and bar mitzvahs and started getting all that stuff. So, you know, that's kind of how it happened. And, you know, I never looked back from there.
So I love about your story, and I think it's not an uncommon one, that really your line in the sand was someone telling you you have to leave. And my story is similar. Like, I was terminated from a job as well. And what's funny is I remember when that happened to me, everyone I knew who was already an entrepreneur, they were like, oh, now you can go be great. Like, now you can go do something really amazing, because you have lost, you know, this anchor, and it kind of frees you up to go do the thing that you're meant to do. And what I'm seeing about ARC in your story so far is how people have stepped in to help you, how, you know, a chef came to your school, and that was kind of like a something important in your life. And then this woman who wanted to help you in your business. And it's just a reminder that none of us do this on our own, that there are always going to be guides, so to speak, on our journey. So we are going to take a very, very quick break. We're going to come back and talk a little bit about some of the high profile people that Chef Max has had the opportunity to work with. So be back in one moment. Are you a business owner seeking guidance on how to handle your business challenges? Do you feel alone and isolated in your business and in tackling your business challenges? I'm attorney Siobhan Smith, and please join me on my podcast, Tell Me About the Hard Part, where every week we'll be giving you real knowledge for your entrepreneurship journey. The show airs every Wednesday at 10 a.m. Drop in so we can make sure to give you the guidance you need on your entrepreneurship journey. So we're back on Tell Me About the Hard Part with Chef Max Hardy. So we've learned a little bit about his background, culinary art school, what made him start his own business. And I know in your work, you've had the great fortune of working with some pretty high profile people. And I'm understanding that that was kind of your plan from the beginning. You knew you wanted to go the personal chef route. How did that come about? So it's a two-part question. One, how did that come about to your business? How did you kind of land those high-profile clients? I know you worked with an NBA player for quite some time. But two, what did that do for your brand, having kind of such a one big client?
Yeah, so, I mean, how it started was I used to go to everywhere with a chef jacket on pretty much, and I still do. Like, so I think this was my walk-in billboard pretty much. But I would go to basketball games with a chef jacket on. I would go to cigar bar with a chef jacket on. I wouldn't go to all the places I knew celebrities, high profile clients would be at. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that was kind of like, all right, my marketing, you know, technique to see if we can draw some of that. And, one time, I was in a cigar bar and, Warren Sapp walked up to me. He was like, hey, you know, you're a chef. I was like, yeah, it's like, you do personal stuff? Like, yeah, of course. And at that time, I really didn't do much personal stuff. But it was like, okay, yeah, this is perfect opportunity. And so I was able to cook for him a couple times. And then I got a phone call from this company called Carefree Lifestyles, mm-hmm. which they rent out all the exotic cars and mansions to different celebrities and athletes when they come to Miami. And so they asked me, would I be able to do this house party? And they wouldn't tell me who it was, but I got to the house and it was for Fabulous. And, you know, from there, you know, at the party, it was Fab, it was Jay-Z, it was Diddy, it was T.I. there. So all of his friends and superstars were there. And it kind of just started happening from there. Then I got another phone call. Hey, Chef, can you show up to the W, Miami Beach? I walk in and it's about eight different NBA players. At the time, I really didn't, it was like 12, like almost like 1 a.m. They were going out to dinner somewhere, or going to a club and they wanted dinner before they went out. And so, we walked out, Mark Sotomayor, Rudy Gay, Tyson Chandler, and they're all hanging out at Amari's crib. And, we just stayed in contact and, over the next 8 months, I got a phone call. Would you be interested in coming to LA to train to be my personal chef? I'll be out there training. I need a chef for 2 weeks. Can you come out? This is a time of when everybody was like getting traded, when they were throwing all the money around to all the top four players. And so I had a deal on the table for LeBron or Amari, but I was in LA with Amari, so I took that position. And I was like, hey, you know, let me go back to Miami and figure it out. And 2 weeks later, I was skipping off to New York to be his personal chef in New York. And so at that time, you know, I still was doing different things with different celebrities and athletes. I was, you know, the Prince of Dubai for a while. I've done stuff with Yelly. I've done stuff for TI. I've done stuff with Sierra. I mean, you pretty much name it. We kind of touched mm-hmm. them in that, you know, A-list world. And then I was like, okay, I'm going to move to New York. Let me start Chef Max Miami, Chef Max NYC, Chef Max LA. That way I can send different chefs to different athletes and celebrities all over the country versus me actually having to be there. So, mm-hmm. You know, I did a, you know, different pivot and tried to expand that brand to make sure we still can hit all the clients, but I can be focused with one client, but I still can, you know, make sure we're servicing all the different clients all over the country.
Got it. So what's interesting to me is, even though it sounds kind of like serendipity, like you just kind of got these phone calls, met these people, it was very intentional. One, you set an intention that you wanted to be a personal chef, that you wanted to do it for a certain type of client, and you walked around with your chef jacket. So it was an opportunity to strike up conversation with people so they can get to know you, get to know what you're doing. And I think that is very key, that even though sometimes it feels like things just happen, there is very often a lot of intentionality behind, you know, happenstance. But I do want to talk a little bit about your time in New York. So, you know, you were in Miami, you were growing this business, working for multiple people, and you were able to kind of scale your business to a way that you couldn't be there, but you can kind of delegate other people to be there. But you're spending a lot of your time with one person. Did at the time when you had just kind of one main client that's getting a lot of your time, did you still feel like an entrepreneur? Did you feel like some of that was getting sapped from you? Did you feel like it helped your brand? How do you feel like it helped kind of your vision overall for what you wanted to do?
I think it was two parts. I think, you know, it definitely helped the brand, because at that point, you know, Amari, he was one of the top athletes in the country. You know, he was the talk of the town. You know, he was a $100 million man. So every day, you know, I would be cooking for not only him, but different celebrities and athletes of his friends that came over to the house. And so I was able to meet a lot of different people, you know, different companies, different organizations that were involved with him, would use me a lot of times because they was just, you know, it was a close connection. So it really helped the brand grow. Mm-hmm. And during that time, I was like, you know, let's take the brand of Chef Max and take it to the next level and use some of his likeness and some of his celebrities and kind of create that for yourself. And so one of the first things I did was, you know, do a cookbook with him mm-hmm. where I taught him how to cook over 6 months, and we documented all that and came up with this cookbook, which is called Cooking with Amari. 100 recipes for pros and rookies. And so that was a way for me to just kind of cross market the Chef Max brand, but leverage his brand and, you know, kind of build some of that, you know, strategies for, to leverage, you know, the brand to the next level. So it was really cool because, you know, now I'm on TV every day talking about this book. We are on, you know, Good Morning America talking about the book. We are on Colin Cowherd's show talking about the book. And so it just really started happening really fast for the brand. But it did feel like, you know, somewhat, hey, you know, you're not an entrepreneur anymore. But every time I kind of felt that way, I just kind of just pivoted and launched something else to kind of cross the market to have both of those feels. And then at the same time, you know, still had to manage, you know, other chefs, you know, placing them for different celebrities and athletes. So it really never was a true moment of like, oh, now you just working with someone every day and you're back getting a paycheck. But, you know, but it was good to be able to do that. And he gave me the flexibility to be able to do that. So it worked out.
Right. What was it like managing other chefs? I mean, obviously they're their own entities. They're working under your brand. Were there any challenges in that?
Yeah. I mean, you know, it's kind of like, you're entrusting them to cook for one of your clients or a client that called you. So there are a lot of times when, you know, chefs come in like, oh, well, I can do this and I don't need to work on that brand. I can be my own brand. And so that was one of the challenges of like trying to keep chefs on board mm-hmm. without them going out and, you know, trying to take a client or,
right.
You know, feeling they can do it on their own, and which a lot of times you can, but, you know, being under the Chef Max brand, it kind of lends them to an array of different, you know, things. Like, so if a chef quits, then I can fill in. If a chef, if a client needs nutrition and wellness, then we have that on board. If a chef, if a client needs, you know, marketing and lifestyle stuff, we have that under our umbrella. So we have so many different things attached to the, you know, the Chef Max brand that offer different clients array of services. So it always sounds easy for, you know, one of my chefs to come in and then think they could do it and then to be their own brand, which is great and you can, but, you know, we just offered a little more services to the client to stand out and be a different kind of, you know, agency. But, yeah, there's a lot of challenges in that, you know, just trying to keep chefs on board and, you know, keep them, you know, willing and the willingness to work under your brand. And it's kind of like babysitting. So,
yeah.
You know, but those are the challenges of, you know, growing a business. And, you know, you can work for a company for 25 years and take the whole Rolodex and start your own company, you know. And,
yeah.
But it's a part of, like, how do you, you know, stop that and just have that working relationship with the, you know, with your guys to keep them, you know, on board.
It sounds like you offered so much that you made it difficult for people to kind of do the poaching of clients. And I think that's what's key. Like, you can't necessarily stop people from trying to do what you do, but they're not you. So once you introduce your secret sauce to it, it makes it more challenging for them to try to do that to your business. I do want to transition a little bit to Chef Max, the restaurateur. So I know right now you have two successful Detroit restaurants, but I also know that prior to that, there was a New Jersey restaurant that was supposed to open that didn't open. What's the story there?
Yeah, so, I mean, you know, the Jersey restaurant was like, hey, it was in Englewood, New Jersey, kind of a cool up-and-coming urban area, but Englewood already had like a really ritzy kind of area. All the celebrities live in that area, but this particular place where we had it was kind of off the beaten path a little bit. And I had started Chef Max Aviation, where we was catering to different private planes leaving out of Teterboro, so I needed a location to do that. But then this particular space was big enough to do both, and so I'm like, let's open a restaurant, let's open a little bistro. And we got all the way to about 85% completed, and then all our pipes bust one day. You know, they're froze over and they bust during the wintertime. And so it kind of set me back just because I didn't have enough money to continue operating
right.
You know, all the different entities and then put another $20,000 into repairing that. And my landlord is just a slumlord, and, you know, he didn't want to help and, you know, didn't see the vision to continue. So, you know, we walked away from that location, and, you know, it was tough because, you know, you put, you know, $20,000-$30,000 into a location and, you know, you can't finish it. So it's almost like a waste of, you know, waste of money. But I just took it as, you know, a lesson learned and pushed on and decided to move back to Detroit to open restaurants. And so I just kind of put that behind me and kept pushing. You know, I think that's one of the things that, you know, you do as entrepreneurs.
Yeah.
You know, not everything's going to work. Not everything's going to, you know, hit a home run. But how do you, you know, bounce back from that and keep pushing? So we kept on moving and moved to Detroit. And now we have two restaurants that's thriving. I never really wanted to be in the restaurant industry just because, you know, being a personal chef is a lot different than owning and operating a restaurant every day. So I was very comfortable as a personal chef and, you know, doing different events and, you know, catering and all that good stuff. And but I got an offer to move to Detroit to open Detroit Shipyard, which we have our restaurant Coop, a Caribbean fusion restaurant, which is a new concept. We took 35 shipping containers and stacked them and made this whole indoor-outdoor food hall, if you will. So one of the first in the country. So I was pretty excited about that. And so that's what, kind of the reason I said yes to even opening the restaurant, because it's something new and innovative. You know,
so after the incident in New Jersey, was it immediate that you would try again? Was it, you know, it happened, you kind of lost money, and you were immediately like, okay, but that's cool, like, on to the next, where I'll try another concept somewhere else? Or was it a process?
It was both. You know, it was like, all right, I'm down, you know, $35,000 right now. So it was like, you know, what I'm going to do? So I ended up taking a consulting job for 8 months to make back that money. And then I was like, okay, I'll just, you know, pivot on to the next, you know, next step in a year. So it literally just took me a year to do this consulting to get cash flow back together. And then I moved on. So there was a little time in between, you know, just trying to refigure out and reorganize and restructure to be able to get to the next level.
What I think is great that you said, just in your word, is something happened. You had a setback, and you had to go do something a little different. You had to kind of give your time as a consultant to a business and make some money. And I think as a business owner, it's never going to be a linear path. Like, sometimes you have to kind of do a turnaround and kind of do something that maybe wasn't necessarily on your plan, but it gets you to your plan. So, you know, it sounds like it was different than what you had been doing. You were kind of a personal chef for a celebrity, but then you're like, okay, let me go do something else in order to set yourself up for what's next. We're going to take another quick break, and I just want to talk to you a little bit more about running a restaurant and what that's like. So we'll take a quick break and be right back.
Statistics show that the most important asset as a successful business owner will be the relationships you build along the way. The Elite Conversations business community of seasoned and successful business owners and professionals will provide you a network of people with knowledge, resources, and the connections that can help take your business to the next level. Don't fall into the trap of frustration that results from being isolated and trying to figure things out on your own. Sign up for membership today and get connected with an awesome group of business owners, entrepreneurs, professionals, and influencers. To learn more about the great benefits of being a part of the Elite Conversations business community, call 301-257-5792.
So back with Chef Max Hardy, and just fascinated to learn about his journey from personal chef to restaurateur. And I do want to talk to you about just running a restaurant. I know for me, my clients, I know employees are amazing because obviously you get to grow because you have people who work for you. But it also can be a source of a headache to some extent. So I do want to just know, what's your approach to kind of hiring and firing and retaining staff? Because obviously you can't run a restaurant without lots of people. So what's your approach to that?
I don't know. it's tough. It's definitely a challenge. You know, it's totally different than, you know, hiring for anywhere else for a corporate, you know, setting position. Right. Being that the market in Detroit specifically is very up and down. It's a new market for food and beverage. You know, Detroit's never been known as a, you know, food right. city and a food destination. So it's always kind of been a meat and potatoes kind of town, very industrial, automotive. And so trying to transition that everyday worker that was working in the plants and to now put them into food and beverage where they have to be more personable and deal with guests, and they didn't have to do that. They just hide behind a plant, and they just, you know, just had to hit a button or, you know, build cars and all that stuff. So now I have to really have great people skills and to understand food, and on, that's on the service side. But then on the chef side of things, you know, you never had any like really high end restaurants or any restaurants or any training facilities for chefs and cooks in the city to train them and show them how to really, you know, take this thing to the next level. So it was like I'm battling between shorter the cooks from Coney Island and trying to get them to understand, hey, we're going to, you know, go elevated a little more right. than a chili cheese dog. And so it's tough. It's, you know, it's a day-to-day training almost to really get them to buy into the whole food and beverage scene. to get them buy into professionalism in the culinary industry. Because they did not have that training, and there's not a lot of, you know, places to offer training for them. So it's been very challenging just on the staffing side. And then just, you know, our restaurants are Caribbean and soul kind of fusions. So not really having many Caribbean restaurants in the city, that's right. been a challenge. So kind of teach them ingredients, teach them just how to, you know, just how to cook some of the food has been a challenge. And, you know, I come from just a, you know, just a real corporate type, you know, background as a chef, just from the different training I had. And so just trying to teach them just that professionalism has been very, you know, very tough. You know, I can teach them how to cook, but the personal skills is something that's really tough to teach, which, you know, it's really hard to do. And that's, you know, not even just speaking to Detroit. I think that's kind of all around the country. As you grow and you want your restaurant to be that next 5-star or 2-star or just be a notable restaurant, it takes a lot of professionalism and skill and constant training. So, you know, those are some of the headaches that I deal with on the you know, the culinary side of things. But it's just a constant training. So I figured I would join on with a local culinary program here in the city to help train staff to now, mm-hmm. once I get them trained, I can, you know, grab a foot of restaurants and put them out there to other chefs in the industry here in the city, just because, you know, I know it's going to be, I know it's a problem and I see it every day. And I talk to a lot of different chefs and they see it and feel it too. So I was like, but how can we be at the forefront of this and really, you know, help foster some of the new chefs and, you know, cooks and service staff to really get to the next level to be able to help all our restaurants kind of thrive.
I think that workforce development is an issue for lots of small business owners, especially when you're not hiring professional employees, like people who have like accounting degrees or whatever. I mean, it's a huge problem. And I think that what a lot of people are doing is exactly what you're doing, is you're getting involved in the pipeline. Okay, we just got to go back and train. I know here in D.C., there are programs with schools just to get the pipeline, which brings me to this point. I know, you know, I follow you on social media, and you are always somewhere giving back. You're always doing some philanthropy, whether it's in the city of Detroit, it's in New York, you are overseas. It is a huge part, I think, of who you are as a person, but also your business. So tell us a little bit about some of the things you work on and why that's important to you and your business.
Yeah, so I started 86 Hunger in 2005 just to be able to give back and show the community that that I grew up in and that looks like me, talk like me, walk like me, that being a chef is something that's valuable. But also, you know, you can take food and stop a lot of the things that we have going on in our community, especially like hunger and childhood obesity and just mm-hmm. all the things that would kind of, you know, hypertension and all the stuff that we have going on in our community. You know, chefs have a lot of answers to it just because they understand how and what to do with food. To 86 Hunger, 86 means in chef terms. And so we named 86 Hunger. So I feel like every chef, if they do their part to give back, they can take the skill set that they have and the understanding of food to do that. And especially in the kitchen, like we throw away a lot of stuff, and, you know, versus throwing that stuff away, let's make it a soup and drop off to the soup kitchen.
Right.
You know, let's make sure, you know, we're teaching the community the proper ways to eat and to dine. Make sure we're teaching the youth, you know, that, you know, breakfast is important, and get back into the schools and have chefs, you know, show up and do some of those things that can really, you know, help foster a lot of the things that we're plagued with in the community. So that's kind of why I started. And then it kind of just took a shape of its own where it went, right, chef, you know, like, let's teach the kids in culinary arts, being that, you know, there's not a lot of chefs like you. Let's start changing that and to cook and go and do some of those culinary programs within the schools and different boroughs in New York and Miami. And then we just sat down and said, you know, just, you know, we're doing stuff in our backyard. Let's go, you know, globally with it. So we've been doing different mission trips from Nevis to Africa. We just got back from Africa for our fourth time, where we adopted a school there to give back to some of the students there and cook for them. $90 feed the kids for a whole year there. So
wow.
We go back a couple times a year to really, you know, make sure the school's good. We plastered the classrooms, we paved out the floors, and kind of just changed the whole atmosphere of these kids at the school, just because, you know, just because you're in the, you know, slums doesn't, I mean, you shouldn't eat every day. You shouldn't have some of the same opportunities as other kids. And so we wanted to just be part of that. So I am hoping 86 Hunger, we merge together to really do that and see if we can put an end to some of this hunger issues and some of the other issues that we're, you know, plagued with all over the world. Because just because you're in America and you think, you know, things are great doesn't mean that they're not going to the same things in Africa or Asia, wherever else. And so it's a lot of the same things happening in different, you know, countries with our people. So I just always wanted to use just my skill set and training that I had to give back to the community. I think, you know, it's something that we all should be doing, you know, just taking some of the things that we know and understand and giving back in some way to, you know, continue giving our people and our communities opportunities to get to the next level.
Got it. Yes. Very amazing work that you do. So again, thank you for sharing so much of your story with us, but I do want to end on one last question. Just tell us about the hard part. What's the hard part of being you, kind of a multi-passionate entrepreneur who has his hand in so much stuff?
The hard part, you know, is a lot of times working 100 hours a week and not seeing a paycheck. That's one of the toughest parts, you know, and just always trying to stay focused and, you know, stay innovative. You know, a lot of times when, you know, you're running a business financially, you think financially it should be working and it's not, and you don't see those, you know, those dollar signs and coming in, but you see the work and you're tired and, you know, the struggle is real and bills are, you know, there.
Yeah.
So you're trying to figure all that out. And, you know, that's a part that no one sees. Everyone sees, oh, he has two restaurants and he has this business, he has that business. You know, but with all those businesses, there come, you know, bills attached to each one of them. And, you know, the thing is trying to stay one foot ahead of that and then stay innovative to go to the move on to the next idea and continue fostering ideas you have already. And just continue your marketing and trying to put together, you know, the things you started. So it has been, you know, truly a blessing to be able to do it. But then, you know, once you're in it, just continuing to keep it afloat is the hard work and the challenge that no one sees, and the late nights and early mornings of, you know, trying to continue making it happen. And, you know, just for me, it's almost like saying no is not an option just because you got that next bill coming the next day.
Right.
You got payroll coming the next day. So there's not an opportunity to be like, oh, I'm not going to do this today. I'm not going to take this job for, you know, $1,000 and you're looking for the $10,000 job. Well, you know, the $1,000 jobs will keep you afloat every day, you know.
Yeah.
When you get the big ones, you know, then that's take you over to the next, you know, the next month to stockpile a little bit to get to the next time when it's slower. So his business is up and down. It's so many different, you know, just times when you're up and a lot of times when you're down. It's more downs than ups mostly. But, you know, as long as you continue to thrive and save when you're up, when the tough times happen, you should be good. So those are some of the challenges, you know. But at the end of the day, you know, keeping a positive attitude, smile, and having fun is key, and it helps a lot of that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so for me, if it's not fun, I really don't want to do it. If I can't get a good laugh out of it or, you know, get some kind of enjoyment out of it, you know, whether it's cooking for a celebrity or cooking for homeless. You know, it's just, if I can't have fun with doing it, then I don't want to do it. So I think that's what keeps me drive, you know, driven to continue. You know, but that's, those are some of the challenges for me.
No, I completely concur with the challenges. It is an absolute roller coaster ride. I told someone the other day, I always feel that you just kind of feel on all the time. Like this sense of always like solving the next problem, always like, what's the next thing? Yep. And like always that sense of just like light switch always on. But so, you know, you are an incredibly talented chef. You can probably go get a job and make a whole lot of money at a very, very fancy restaurant and call it a day. Why keep going?
You know, one of the things is just, it's for the community, one, because like one of our restaurants is in the heart of the city. And, you know, it's a casual dining, but, you know, just a different flair at a cheaper price point than going down midtown, downtown. So I want to do something for the community that's sustainable and that has healthy food. So that's one of the reasons, you know, just kind of helping my community. Two is it's hard to see myself going back and working for someone after, you know, I don't work this hard and put so much blood, sweat, and tears into it. You know, it's like, okay, do you, you know, want to give up now? You've been in it so long and, you know, you figure it out this far. Why not continue, you know, and continue pivoting to the next idea, the next restaurant concept, but this one's not working or this not working versus saying, you know, go back and make that money, which I could. It's just, I think, is a deeper passion in me to continue versus, you know, quitting and going back to, you know, getting a $200,000 job per year. It's like, let's keep continuing to ride and maybe you can make $1 million one day. So
no, I get it. The drive to keep going is stronger than the drive to quit.
Oh, yeah.
Got it. Well, thank you so much for your time. I am truly appreciated. Can you let the people know how they can find you, your website, social media, your restaurant, where folks can get your books? We only talked about one of your books. You actually have two books, where people can get your books and how they can support you in your philanthropic work as well.
Yep. So it's Chef Max Hardy at all social media. You can get me at Chef Max Hardy, Chef Max L. Hardy. .com, and then all the books are either on social media or on our website. The restaurant is River Bistro, Detroit.com, and then CoopDetroit.com as well. And then I Am Hope Foundation, where you can check out all our work that we put in the communities in Africa and so forth. So as much help as we can get is greatly appreciated. But yeah, no, thanks for having us. This is great.
Chef Max was amazing. Just so many gems in learning about his story and just the up and down of it. And sometimes you can have more downs than ups. So great episode. Again, if there's a topic you want covered, if you want to be a guest, please email me at Siobhan at the SJS Law Firm. Please follow me across the socials. My website is the SJS Law Firm. On Instagram, I am Siobhan J. Smith. Twitter, I'm at the SJS Law Firm. Also on Facebook at Siobhan J. Smith or your Small Business General Counsel. Please share this episode and the prior episodes. Tell someone about it. Talk about it. Use the hashtag Tell Me About the Hard Part. New episodes drop every Wednesday at 10 a.m. So please share. We hope that this was helpful for you. Thank you. Bye.
Thanks for listening to Tell Me About the Hard Part with attorney Siobhan J. Smith. During this program, you received information and guidance to begin to navigate the laws that affect how you do business. However, attorney Smith and her legal team would love to address your specific needs and ensure that your best interests are protected under the law. Schedule your personal legal strategy session today. Go to the SJS Law Firm. .com. That's the SJS Law Firm.com.